Don't judge me on performance. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is my co-host, Vice Chairman of our Institute, good friend, fellow analyst, and all-around great guy, and beleaguered taxpayer, Chuck Michaels.
Gee, what are you going to do if I'm not sitting on this end so you can introduce me?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to figure out another way to fill up probably half of the time that we've got to do on the program. You're not there.
Yeah.
And I'll have to figure out a way in order to actually use the software and the equipment that you know how to run in order to get it on the air. So, you know, everybody, can you do me a favor? Keep prayer for Chuck's good health and his family's prosperity, because without him, you wouldn't have us on here. And if you like us, pray for him.
You know what? My skills aren't that unique. You'd find somebody to help you out. But the fact is, it's kind of interesting that you and I are able to sort of analyze our way through a number of situations. And some people may not agree with our analysis. That wouldn't shock me at all. After all, I've recently gotten some nasty grams from people who don't agree with my analysis on different things on different kinds of places. So, you know, I've gotten kind of used to people not agreeing with the way I analyze things. But that's quite all right. I get this little 15-minute segment every day to try to push my viewpoint. So let's get to it.
Well, Chuck, today you and I had talked earlier, and our conversation had gone around to various things. And of course, you know, as you're working locally with various groups, concerned citizens, taxpayers groups, and you and I both work with, the conversation always comes back around to schools, school levies and taxes, and teachers. But you know what? It's usually just us talking about those things that concern us in relation to this, about our taxes being too high, about, you know, teacher pay scales, as you can go to a number of different sources now and find the exact amounts of money, including benefits, that teachers get paid in each local school district. But you know, the one thing that we don't see usually, because honestly, it's the one thing that most schools and school districts don't do, and that is an evaluation of teacher performance. Yes, we hear, oh, yes, well, you know, so-and-so and such-and-such, they've been here a long time, and they're 30 years, and they're the head of this department, or they're doing that. Does that really tell us about how good that person is in that job? I don't think that that's the case. You know, the only thing we can tell, possibly, if you have children in the district, is when little Johnny or Janie and you see their grades for each of the classes given to them by each of their teachers, and maybe some notes or some information from the guidance office about how little Johnny or Janie are doing in relation to what they're being taught. But do we ever see, Chuck, any kind of a analysis or a discussion about how the teacher themselves is performing in the classroom? I mean, of course, you can look at teachers, you can see, well, they've got this degree from this school, and yes, maybe they're doing this, that, and the other continuing education, or maybe they've gotten this award or this recognition. But how do we really know on a year-to-year basis how good these teachers are?
Well, the answer is we don't. Basically, what certain teachers have is a reputation that's more of a community reputation for being a good teacher or a bad teacher. But frankly, there as near as I can tell, there's no real criteria for measuring what makes a good teacher and what makes a bad teacher. You know, in college, the students evaluate professors.
Yes,
and
they do.
I'll be quite honest. I remember a couple of professors that I just really excoriated because they were awful. And I don't mean just really kind of bad. I mean, like, truly awful. I'm not sure that they could teach a dog how to eat out of a bowl. Maybe that's a bad illustration, but
I think it might be.
These people were completely incapable of really conveying any kind of coherent information in a fashion that made it possible to stick the pieces together. You know, that's one thing you try to learn how to do when you're in college is learn how to think. Well, if you're not given all the pieces, it's very difficult to put together 1,000 piece puzzle when you're given 850 pieces, and also maybe aren't given the picture that's on the box top to see what it's supposed to look like. You know, you got 150 pieces missing and no model. Well, good luck. And that's, I think, what's going on in a lot of schools these days. There is no real criteria for evaluating teachers. And, you know, we get the idea that, he's been here 30 years, so therefore he must have learned how to teach something in that time frame. Not necessarily.
Well, that's true. And you know what? It isn't just us, and maybe it isn't just our listeners, who sometimes may stop and think, well, you know, are we getting our money's worth in education? Governor John Kasich's administration has been thinking that, too. And as a matter of fact, today, Monday, the administration released a 23-page report where they actually surveyed teachers to find out about how they feel about being rated on their performance in the classroom and how that performance evaluator would be tied to their salaries. Now, for those of you who don't know, right now in education, you have teachers who come in, and they come in at a starting salary based on degree or something of that nature would determine where they start on the pay scale. But mostly what occurs from that point forward is that their pay is increased based upon their longevity. Not based upon their performance, not based upon how many students they have who excel or graduate or who achieve highly in competitive academic enterprises, but mainly on the fact of how long they've sat in the seat. We have what's called step increases, where after a certain length of time, you know, as you go up levels and steps. It's similar to what the federal government does with their general services contracts. You hear somebody talking about being a GS-9 or a GS-13.
Right.
Well,
right.
That's their step levels. And what will happen is that the more time you got in, the more months or more years you've got in, the higher you go. And it's an automatic pay raise. And it only goes one direction. It only goes up. Because that's the other thing currently that I think is problematic in Ohio education system is that your continued employment in a school district, unless you do something egregious like, deal drugs or have sexual relations right. with a student in the school, the only way that the district has to make cuts and you happen to be the low man on the totem pole or woman on the totem pole in seniority, because the longer you can sit in the seat and get your automatic pay raises, the more secure your job comes. It's like a perverse tenure program. You've been here for 28 years, therefore, whether or not your students are doing anything at all successfully, if we have to make a cut because we can only afford to pay one out of the two of you, the teacher that's got 15 years and students who are excelling and, you know, blowing away in district competitions and state competitions and national competitions in that curricular area, well, guess what? If we have to make the cut because teacher A's got 28 years in the seat and teacher B, the exceptional teacher, has 15, guess who's getting cut? Because it's all based on seniority. Teacher B.
Oh, absolutely. And seniority is a really bad way to measure the worth of an employee. Just because someone has managed to fly under the radar and keep from being fired over 30 years does not necessarily mean they're a great employee. It may mean they're absolutely mediocre, but the fact is they haven't done anything bad enough to get fired. Neither have they done anything good enough to be put in a position of higher authority or responsibility. And therein lies the rub. For instance, in an article in the Columbus Dispatch, there's a quote in here: while many educators agreed that student growth and achievement is the, quote, true measure of a teacher's effectiveness, they are skeptical about whether it can be fairly gauged, the report said. Well, that's wrong, I think.
I was going to say, we didn't seem to have any problem with being able to gauge that in all the years prior to having the collective bargaining law in Ohio. Well, I think we gauged how well a teacher was doing based upon how their students performed, because there were objective measurements. There are grades. There are the mastery of the subject areas. I mean, for goodness sake, we've even gone so far as to have what the Ohio Achievement Test or Proficiency Test to say that, hey, at the very least, they can do D-plus level work. There are many measurements, but the thing that I think the teachers fear, Chuck, is having that student performance and how those students do under that teacher become part of how the administrations in these local school districts determine how much or not a teacher actually gets paid or gets raises. We call it merit-based selection rather than seniority-based selection.
And unfortunately, the problem with union rules is that everyone is assumed to have the same level of talent.
Exactly.
The assumption is equality of ability. And of course, that is a gross misassumption. Not everyone has the same ability to teach. You and I both know it's radical egalitarianism. And the fact is that there are people who are able to teach. There's the old saying that everybody knows is a truism, but that's because it has some fact in it. Those who can't do teach, those who can't teach administrate. There's a reason for that. There are people who are good administrators and lousy teachers, and there are people that also can't teach, and yet they have a degree in it, and therefore they're qualified. Well, that doesn't work. Now, there's a highly ironic section right under that section I wrote in the Dispatch article that says, new evaluations, if poorly designed and implemented, could be disastrous, they said. Quote, the problem in my building is everyone gets a good evaluation, even really bad teachers, commented one teacher. Well, that's a tacit admission right there, not even tacit, it's an explicit admission that there are some really crummy teachers who have contracts, and apparently they're not being fired because they're being given good evaluations. Now, who's giving them the good evaluations?
Well, basically right now, that would be the administrations who have to negotiate with these teachers every time they come around for collective bargaining agreements. You know, the thing is, Chuck, the thing that concerned me about this report, and not so much the report itself, and first of all, you know, I want to make a disclaimer that we're not saying that all teachers are bad. Okay, so right. I don't want our listeners coming away with that. But we are saying that we need to have some objective ways of determining whether or not a teacher is performing well and doing the things that we as parents and we as taxpayers expect from that person who is acting in loco parentis, as it says in the Latin, you know, in the place of the parent. How are they doing at helping to mature and broaden and deepen little Johnny and little Janie's educational horizons? Or are they doing it at all? Are kids just killing time in a classroom with a teacher who can't handle the workload or who's so busy worried about? And I remember back in my high school, I had a science teacher who was more worried about the coaching that he was doing of the school sports team than he was about whether or not somebody knew the molecular tables and whether or not they were going to be able to go on, you know, to go to college because they had a strong background in science. He'd rather they had a nice 40 and a vertical leap of 42 inches rather than getting straight A's in science. You know, if you wanted to evaluate that teacher, well, you know, he probably wouldn't have scored out very high. We have to have an objective standard to this, because what I saw in this report was what they're proposing is either we have the Department of Education draw a model, or we leave it up to each of the individual 614 individual school districts in Ohio to come up with their own model basis. Now, I don't know about you, Charles, but I'm not sure having 614 different performance evaluators out there would be a wise move. Maybe having a general model with a handful of performance spots that a school district could customize based upon their local experience or their local situation, that might not be so bad. but basically allowing each of them to develop their own whole cloth, I'm not so sure that's going to work very well.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, so if you want to, we can continue this tomorrow or tune in and find out what we do talk about tomorrow if this isn't it. Please be with us tomorrow at 5:30 for more principles and policies.